This is God and Autobiography, the podcast, a dramatic adaptation of the book God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher by Jerry L. Martin. He was a lifelong agnostic, but one day he had an occasion to pray. To his vast surprise, God answered in words. Being a philosopher, he had a lot of questions, and God had a lot to tell him. Episode 17. And so, Lord, you call forth the first human beings?
Yes, the first inklings.
But they evolved?
The transition to early humans is both slow and sudden. At first, you couldn't tell them from animals, but I could see their potential. They didn't have language, but their sounds and marks had representative purposes. They could connect one thing to another, one thought to another. They could remember their past and replay it in their minds. They slowly developed a sense of the future. They have symbolic capacity.
And this made a difference.
Take the symbolic system of counting, keeping records of the number of cattle or bushels of wheat. The first step is letting a single mark or object stand for something else. A stone might stand for a head of cattle, for example. Symbolic capacity makes everything different. Events, bodily motions, and things no longer just are. They have a meaning. Before, a stone was just a stone. Scratches on a clay tablet were just scratches. Now they may stand for cattle, or for the king, or for past and future events, or for the deity.
And this helped them to think about those things?
For the first time, thought can be detached from objects. Plans can become abstract long-term. The response to other creatures can be evaluative, normative. It becomes possible to notice that a particular action falls short of the best or right action, that a particular human being falls short of the ideal human being. Beauty also becomes possible. As you can see in prehistoric cave paintings, creatures from a very low level enjoy sensory stimulation, but true appreciation of beauty is seeing an ideal form in something material. What they were drawing on cave walls are ideal bulls.
I found a very fine collection of cave paintings and other prehistoric art in Images of the Ice Age by Paul G. Bon and Jean Vertu. There is a breathtaking simplicity and grace to many of the paintings. The authors report, quote, "The fluid, effortlessly drawn, well-proportioned animal figures suggests that the artist carried everything in their mind's eye. They never took a measurement. They projected onto the rock an inner vision of the animal." End quote.
Study the cave paintings and other artifacts. They respond to and reflect how I was presenting myself to them. You will be able to see or infer what my experience was like, what I was trying to do.
Lord, these cave paintings also have an aura of holiness.
That's right. My first approach is to give humans the sense that nature is special, sacred, that there is something more than trees and clumps of grass, that there is also spiritual presence.
What does this mean for you, for your life?
For me, it means the first spark of real interpersonal interaction, not just vague spiritual rapport. From very early, humans, proto-humans, have a sense of something more, something higher. Their sense of the divine is not just fear and wish fulfillment, though there's plenty of that. there's a real sense of relating to me as a person, not just as a vague spirituality of nature. It is hard to convey in retrospect, but at this point, I do not quite know I have a personality, an individual personhood. Events pass through my consciousness. I have a sense of my intelligence pervading the world, of fulfilling a universal telos. I feel a spiritual rapport with life. But none of that constitutes a sense of personhood, of an I standing opposite a you. The proto-humans give me that, or I developed it or became aware of it in relation to them. For the first time, human beings mirror me, look at me eyeball to eyeball, and I try to draw them forward to be more evolved, to be more fully human and fully spiritual.
So the emergence of human beings was a surprise?
Yes. Even though I saw the unfolding of life and understood its trajectory, there's a discontinuity between animal life and human life that's surprising. People are not just smarter animals. It is not just that they have souls. Animals have a kind of soul too. It's that they are creative, free, self-reflective, open-ended, have a yearning to go beyond themselves. Now I can send dreams, give intuitions, stir love, frighten if necessary. I begin to develop my arsenal of ways to deal with human beings. But I am too primitive and undeveloped. I know little about how to be effective in bringing them forward.
Scholars believe that there was cultural, creative explosion in the late Paleolithic period over 30,000 years ago. The Oxford Illustrated History of Prehistoric Europe calls it the Upper Paleolithic Revolution, quote, a major watershed in cultural development, end quote. According to the Oxford History, DNA's studies, quote, point to the conclusion that all of the present-day populations throughout the world were most probably derived from a single common ancestor within the span of the past 200,000 years, end quote. Is this the same as Adam and Eve, Lord?
Don't be too mythological. That is, they were not in a Garden of Eden and so on. But the garden story captures with great precision the prototypical experience of human innocence and of divine innocence and awkwardness. The story of Adam and Eve portrays the first kind of experience I had with human beings. I created them in my image as essentially creative force. I gave them creative force, the power of sexuality, the ability to create other human beings. I gave them objects of beauty in nature and in each other, and pleasure in eating, moving about, and enjoyment of each other. I had been all alone, and I enjoyed the company.
And so you were no longer alone.
At first, I imagined I could walk among humans and enjoy their company. This required that they obey me while not being in awe of me, that they retain a certain innocence. This was my first experience discovering that humans cannot interact with God in the simple, direct way they interact with one another. Like children not separated from their mother, at first they had little individuality or purpose. They enjoyed the good things I had given them and did not understand the power of good and evil or the power and complexity of their own sexuality.
And this led to problems.
I had underestimated the power of love. First, I created Adam, and I could see he was alone as I had once been. This was not good. He did not see it because he did not know anything different. But as he tried to befriend various animals, he would quickly reach the limit of those relationships and be frustrated and unfulfilled. So I created woman and made her lovely in his eyes. They were naked and knew no shame, and their sexuality was intense and profound.
How did this affect you, Lord?
Frankly, I felt left out. I had no such consort, and while obedient, man loved woman more than me. Though understandable in light of the human nature I'd given them, it was not right. They knew it was not right and began to disobey me. They hid their nakedness, which is to say, they hid their creativity and sexuality from me, detached it from my purpose, and used it solely for their own pleasure and intimacy. Innocently enough, as children might do, but still wrong.
Do you need the world for completion, or does the world need you?
Both. Neither of us is complete or perfect in ourselves. I can only develop a self-consciousness and become a person by interacting with the world and with people.
For the first time, the dim outline of an overall story was emerging. If we and God develop together in interaction with one another, then the drama of history and of individual lives begins to make sense. We are not standing still. We are moving forward together. Lord, is there an aim, like perfecting the world or uniting us all into the Godhead?
No, not exactly. There's a purpose, but not an endpoint. The notion of an endpoint derives from the model of the human will and its desires, getting what it wants. The purpose of singing a song is not to get to the end.
So history comes to nothing? I found this answer distressing, and Abigail was even more upset. One of the Jews' gifts to the world is the very idea of history, not as a series of endless episodes or cycles, but as a progress, with a beginning, the creation, and a grand finale, the coming of the Messiah. Abigail doesn't even like movies without happy endings, and we weren't talking about movies. We were talking about whether life had any meaning or purpose at all. This was a concern neither of us would let go. Thank you for listening to God and Autobiography, the podcast. The words of God are spoken by Jerry L. Martin, who heard the voice. He can be reached at godandautobiography.com. The narration and dialogue of Mr. Martin are spoken by Scott Langdon, who also edited, mixed, and engineered this episode. He can be reached at thescottlangdon.com. You can read the original true story in the book from which this podcast was adapted, God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher by Jerry L. Martin. Available now at Amazon.com and always at godandautobiography.com. Pick up your own copy today.